Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. I love the shows when I have returning guests, not because it's less work for me, but because my guests bring us more information than when they were here before. And today we have the honor of having two returning guests and two new guests. So we're going to provide you with so much information. So go ahead and grab your notepad, grab your recorder, whatever it is that it takes for you to obtain this information, grab it, because I know the information that we're going to share today, you don't want to miss. And if you don't want to miss it, guess what? Your friends don't want to miss it as well. So go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Be an activist. Actively let people know the Roundtable Talk Show is live. So whether that's your parents, your spouse, your child, the neighbor across the street, wake up your roommate. He's asleep. It's 8 o'clock. It's time for him to wake up anyway. It's time for the world to wake up to the Roundtable Talk Show. And we already know that friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're doing your job, I'll go ahead and do my job and go ahead and introduce my very first guest. And you have seen her here before. You loved her when she was on the show before. And so we have the honor of introducing Miss Marcy Keenan. Marcy Keenan is the founder of Harlem-based Preventative Lifestyle Assistance Network, or PLAN, a collaborator with the Eight, a California-based nonprofit, to collaborate on this diabetes awareness challenge. Good morning, Marcy. How are you?
I am doing well, Sharifa. How are you and everyone else on the panel today?
I am wonderful. Thank you for joining us. And I always ask my returning guests the same question. What made you decide to come back to the Roundtable Talk Show?
I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I had my pen and paper in between my speaking the last time I was here. So, it's a very enlightening and engaging show. And as I said earlier, before I blinked, it was over. I was shocked at how quickly an hour could go by. So that says a lot, Sharifa.
Thank you. Thank you. Everyone, the new people come and they're nervous. They're like, I don't know what to expect. And then an hour later, we're all BFFs. I love it. Talk to us, Marcy, a little bit about who you are, what you have going on right now.
So, for anyone who doesn't know, today is Veterans Day, of course. Thank you for all of you who have put your lives on the line for our freedoms. But it's also Diabetes Prevention, National Diabetes Prevention Month. And that has been the case since November 1st. So, I have partnered with a company, an organization that I've worked with a while. I know the owner. She's one of my best friends. And she's the founder of the 8.org. They're based in the Riverside County area of California. She's been helping the underserved and marginalized communities out there for quite some time, helping them with health, wellness, food, now with COVID-19 and all that that has brought in terms of, insecurities. They've been feeding people down in the Coachella Valley area. And so we decided, as you know, I do diabetes prevention. I do the CDC's National Diabetes Prevention Program. I'm about to start another program November 18th, which is a week from today. Tonight, I have a webinar featuring Brother Lou Keith, who is going to talk about diabetes. He has a lifestyle center which focuses on healing people naturally in Tennessee. I've been down there and it's an amazing place. I had a great 5 days down there. So he's going to be my guest and I'm going to introduce people who are joining this class next week. It's a year-long class, as you might remember. And we've gotten some incredible results with our current cohorts that are ending in January, and we're expanding. 88 million American adults are pre-diabetic, one out of three, and 84% of them haven't a clue, right? And so we've launched Check Your Risk, which is a 1-minute, 8-question survey. You answer these questions, and you get an idea as to whether you are at risk of developing type 2 diabetes. This test was originated by the American Diabetes Association. And so it's, you know, proven, scientific, and the whole nine. We've just adapted it so that we could follow and track the people. And for those who are high risk, they're invited to join in on this free webinar. We'll be doing a series of them. Even though this was launched for National Diabetes Prevention Month, Check Your Risk will be ongoing, because our goal, Sharifa, is to get 1 million people to do this 1-minute test, right? The more people know, the more they're empowered. A lot of people have no idea that they're on the verge of getting a disease that is, this is another part of our effort. It is preventable. Type 2 diabetes is not only preventable, it is reversible, which brings me to my next point. Eric Adams, who is the Brooklyn Borough President here in New York City, is joining us in Check Your Risk and our effort to get 1 million people to do the diabetes risk test. Why is that significant? He had an A1C of 17 when he went to the hospital having lost his sight, right? And he changed his diet. He thought initially, he changed his diet after he went online and he Googled reversing diabetes, not really thinking he could reverse it, but he at least wanted to slow the progression of what was happening with his body, right? And as a result, he actually did reverse it by adopting a whole food plant-based diet. His 80-year-old mother, who had been diabetic for years and had been on insulin for about 7 or 8 years, adapted the same protocol. And guess what? She's no longer on insulin and she's no longer diabetic. So let me explain, because some people say diabetes is chronic. It's not. However, when you make those changes, it's the changes that have helped you. So you have a reprieve based on the lifestyle changes you make. If you then decide to start eating and stressing and sitting and doing the things that you were doing that got you in that condition, then you will go back to being diabetic.
I want to talk about that some more, Marcia. You gave us so much information, so many questions and areas to go into. And I have plenty of questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest real quick, and we will come back to you. And something also that you said, Marcy, when you were talking about kind of the whole idea of different people and empowerment. So I want to go ahead and introduce Ms. Lisa Schmidt. Lisa is a culture change coach, speaking publicly on what's wrong with workplaces and how to fix them, and facilitating leaders stepping into difficult conversations that move the dial. She's also the co-host of the Different People podcast to role model what it looks like to talk about hard things, in this case, diversity and inclusion, in a way that changes our relationships for the better. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. And, you know, first of all, I'm thrilled to be here. You have such a wide variety of guests and perspectives, and inviting people into having conversations to me is one of the most important things that we can do in the world, is to get to know one another. So it's no longer us and them, but we're all in us. So you're doing a really big part in creating that kind of culture. I'll just say a couple of things about what I do, because I'm curious to hear, like, to get this conversation started. I'm really, really interested in personal and professional change and transition. And I have a consulting business that I work through, WorkSphere Consulting. And my primary area of practice is really supporting people being able to speak truthfully and candidly with respect and with dignity. And how do we create workplaces where people feel, and they don't just feel they belong, they do belong. But a big part of my work is really role modeling what it looks like for me, a white woman, to step into courageous conversations about what makes us different from one another, be it race, religion, ethnicity, color, ability, identity. and to help other people do the same thing. And so a little bit about what I'd like to talk about today is how do we have those conversations and talk a little bit about the small piece I'm doing towards that through the podcast that I co-host called Different People.
I like that. And it was what's interesting to me about one of the things that you said, Lisa, was you reminded me of another guest, and she was going out in New York City and she was helping children find other ways and alternative ways to do art and just like have a better life. And she was just like, that may be surprising for a white woman. And I was like, I don't know why it would be surprising. I think every one of us, each and every one of us is responsible for making this world a better place. You know, so it doesn't have to be like the black people who come in and help the black people or the white people who come. It's like everybody is responsible for making diversity, equality, and inclusion something that matters to the world. That's my thought, Lisa. So I'm just glad you're doing it.
Yeah, thank you. And I completely agree. You know, it's not something out there that somebody else is going to fix. It's within us to do something, each of us as individuals.
Yes, absolutely. Why are you so passionate about this?
Oh, great question. I'm calling in from Canada. Mm-hmm. Canada and the United States have slightly different perspectives on kind of the social culture. And where the United States often has an idea of a melting pot, like you come here and you become part of the culture, Canada has more of a multicultural perspective, which is come here and you are Canadian, but we welcome and value all the things that make you different, as well as all the things that make us all similar. And what I found in growing up, that's a lovely concept, but we have just as many issues around racism and exclusion and the pain that happens when people of color are targeted by, you know, whether it's by police. I mean, we have issues of police brutality up here as well. And I don't want to live in a world in which that's okay. And I'm really passionate. My passion comes from I want to belong and I want other people to belong. Like I have a strong drive to create communities where we actually do have the same opportunities and that we actually do care for one another. And that it's not just words on a page or in a document in an organization about valuing diversity and inclusion. We actually each find a way to live it. And I wanna do my work to live that. And I wanna help other people get there as well.
I think that's beautiful, Lisa. I think in the real world, that's beautiful. But if that doesn't work, I think you just have to create your own world. Like our next guest, Mr. Bill Poggi. Bill is a degreed accountant with a Vanderbilt MBA in finance and operations. However, what Bill is focusing on right now is his painless. We're talking about all these books that are being turned into a feature film, The Byzantine Pineapple. So instead of just focusing on finance and operations, he's created his own world. And he's been here on the Roundtable Talk Show before. And he talks to us not only about his current ventures, but what he has coming up. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa, and everyone out there, as well as our other guests. It's so nice to see you again. And I am here for shameless promotion. I do need to correct you on one item. The goal is to translate the products into big budget films.
Yes.
So that is being worked upon. It is not that they are actually being started upon in that context. But the lead product is the Less Trilogy, which is painless, blindless, and timeless. And this takes 30 seconds to explain the story. It's 2005. The man with the hurricane full of trouble is Augustus Valentine. Aug runs an import-export company outside Port Everglades that was started with illegal money. So were the real estate developments in Sandestin. People with illegal money must do something with it. Periodically, goods are smuggled in and out of the country. In come the rubies, sapphires, and diamonds. They are promptly stolen from Mr. Aug. Who did what and why is the primary plot. Painless also features Jocelyn, Aug's crazy girlfriend. Jocelyn sells jaguars in Merritt Island. They have a weekend getaway in Ponte Vedra. There's a big hurricane finish on the beach in Sandestin with gold, platinum, gambling in the mix, as well as character development chapters in Detroit, Philadelphia, Cleveland, and Nashville.
Bill, if I had awards, you know, I think I'm gonna start making up awards. I think that's my next step, you know, because I'm gonna give you the award for like the 30 second spiel, like the commercial, because that was beautiful. I love it. I love it. We have to get this into a feature film deal. Are you looking for like investors or venture capitalists? I want to see this on a large screen.
Well, sure I am, but I am fighting upstream because everything that this is promoted as and is presented is completely different from what the Hollywood take or in New York City, the publishing industry perspective of everything is. I have gone out, I met 20,000 people in 16 states at 130 locations and sold 2,500 copies. So when I go out and I meet people, I can sell 12.5%. It's a phenomenal sales rate. So I know that the products work. However, this is not, it goes against the grain. This doesn't, the book doesn't have my name blurbed all over it. I'm not saying buy this because I am the author. I'm saying it's the product. I'm focusing on the product. It doesn't have exciting or any of the book review stuff all over the front of it. Okay, I'm focusing on the product selling itself. And the 30-second spiel is, in essence, the primary advertising campaign condensed on down. Now, when you turn on the TV and you see ads for movies, you see all the blurbage. You don't really get a 30-second tour. You get hype of a specific actor or a specific actress or a review that says exciting, thrilling. My focus is something that says, let's go beyond this. Let's go back to the product and focus on the product.
Mm. From Hollywood, isn't Hollywood, from my understanding, kind of diverse though? I mean, I know they have the blurbs. I know they have those actors focusing on it, but I still believe, and maybe it's the naive little girl in me who loves television and film, but that there's a market for everything, that there's someone who wants to see this particular project.
Well, this particular project, my estimates based on other projects, et cetera, and my business experience is that it would take $75 million to produce. So it's not a small fee to produce. There's a car chase from Cocoa to Cocoa Beach. There's a two-stage car chase through Detroit. There is a huge opening night celebration on the beach in Sandestin, followed by a hurricane destroying Sandestin. And then this sets up the sequels of Blindless and Timeless. Well, the cost to bring that to screen, this is a big tentpole production vision. And the runtime would be 2.5 hours. This is not how Hollywood thinks. This is not how, and if they're going to do it, they want to be the people raking in all the money off of it. I mean, I'm a business person, right? I'm willing to make a deal on things. But I didn't do all this to give it away.
Right.
So it does run counter. And, Hollywood is known for having very egotistical people in management. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly plenty of news stories that are very current that run quite counter to a lot of the, diversity conversations our prior guests have brought up, or so it appears in the media. So it is running counter, and I know that the only way I will make this work is through producing more product, which is on the way, and also by getting grassroots support, and hence I am here with the shameless self-promotion.
You are so funny, Bill. That's what we do on the Roundtable Talk Show. We are here for shameless self-promotion. I'm going to come back to you, Bill. I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest. And one of the reasons I was so excited to have her here today is because not only is she a friend of mine, but I'm so, so, so excited about the December 29th and 30th, New Year, New You, two-day teleconference. And so I've been having some of the presenters and speakers join us on the show, and we have the honor of speaking to Ms. Ava Benari today. She is the founder and CEO of the Elevate Institute, a cutting-edge health coaching firm specializing in empowering driven professionals to take charge of their body and their health, and you will see her at the two-day teleconference. Good morning, Ava. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. How are you?
I'm excited to have you here. I finally get to speak to you. I finally get to learn a little bit more about what you do. So thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, I offer a way that is counter to what we've been taught. I'm a professional in the health industry. And some people call it health coaching, but it's really a practitionership. So it's holistic healing. And a lot of times that's something you find in private practice. And as you mentioned, you know, in my bio there, it's all about the professional. This is where I came from. I came from a world of climbing the corporate ladder, you know, the insufferable, how do I get higher, you know, and that burnt me out. It burnt me out in such a way that I ended up starting over in the same career path, but at different companies again and again. I needed the break and again and again. And what I'm finding is those invisible illnesses that people come up with, chronic fatigue, the anxiety, the insomnia, you know, all the stuff that doesn't show up on an x-ray. People need more help than what is provided by their medical practitioner through a regular workplace environment. And so I bring that into the workplace environment under corporate wellness.
Mm-hmm. So you do that through the Elevate Institute.
Right.
What made you decide to create it?
It's been a child of mine that I've been raising over the last 10 years out of my own need. So I came from corporate and I found myself unable to produce. So being laid off and being sick, working so hard that didn't matter how much I slept, 17 hours a day or more, and that is chronic fatigue, ended up in a myriad of other problems, about 30 different symptoms and diagnoses. And I was looking for a solution that didn't involve a pill. Can we get away from taking the chemical drug for a solution, because it never really is the solving item. And my search resulted in me becoming a holistic practitioner in mineral balancing. It was the one thing that made sense to me. And so I became a certified practitioner for myself so that I could learn how to take care of me. And about 2 weeks into this being certified, I'm on the phone with my now deceased ex-husband. And he's complaining to me after we were divorced for 12 years. We were now in the place of friendly, you know, let's talk about the kids. Yes, that. And he starts to complain to me about what's going on with him. He's naming off all of these hepatitis C. I've got prolapse and I've got iron toxicity. And now the doctor says I have type 2 diabetes. And I says, oh, well, this sounds like things that can be helped with mineral balancing. I says, why don't you send me some of your hair? That's how I get the information. And we'll figure this out. And he laughed at me. And he says, no, my doctors have me. I'm fine. I'm on medication. Okay. All right, fine. Good. 2 weeks later, I'm receiving a phone call from the hospital. And he was in the hospital to help eliminate, break up some kidney stones. They gave him something intravenously to calm him down. It was enough to put him over the edge. He had a massive heart attack and died. Now he was on.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry to hear that.
17 medications. That's the sorry part. The doctors knew what he was taking and he was in the hospital in the care of doctors and nurses. And I'm not saying that they're always, you know, wrong or problematic. This is about being inclusive. It's just, why did this occur? And so I'm asking the why questions. And that incident made me realize that too many individuals go through life not aware of their options to get off of medication and to feel the integrity of their own body. So I hung my shingle and I said, all right, I'm going to start my own business. The Elevate Institute was then birthed. This was September 1st of 2011, and I haven't looked back.
Don't look back. Marcy, what are your thoughts on what Eva had to say?
Wow, I'm just blown away by what everyone had to say. Definitely, I'm right there with her and Lisa as well. You know, it's like we're all doing the same. We're not doing the same thing, but we have very similar revelations, mm-hmm. right? Natural remedies, allowing the body to heal itself. A lot of meds that we take, what they actually do is mask the symptoms. And often that is our body's natural way. When I have mucus, that's a good thing. Yeah. You think of it as a bad thing. You know what I mean? And then we try to take something to avoid having mucus. No.
Right.
Get it out, right? So, you know, she mentions type 2 diabetes and 17 medications. None of them stop the diabetes. I'm sure someone here has heard of Dr. Jason Fung. Shake your head if you know who I'm talking about. Yeah. His book, The Diabetes Code, has become my Bible. And as I transition into plan having its own curriculum, it's going to be based on a lot of his knowledge and application. So I love what she's doing. I was writing notes, and I think I'll be keeping in contact with some of you, because I think we can do some things together. Something a couple of people said, change and transition. You know, that was Lisa. That's what we all are working on, right? Change and transition. And then what else was said? You know, again, it's tied to it's Diabetes Prevention Month. A lot of people, like her husband, I hate to hear that story, but it's, I have a friend, he just unfortunately lost two of his toes, you know? This is an ugly disease. It's the only disease that affects every organ, you know? And it's sad that it can be prevented. I don't know why doctors are not clearer on that, right? I know self-change and changing habits, the older you are, it's harder. I was diagnosed in October, 2012, I was diagnosed pre-diabetic myself. And I thought, huh? First time ever, I'm hearing this. Like, I'm 55 right now. But things catch up with you. If you grow up in an environment, the amount of sugar that we ate in my household, when I realized on a daily basis, the little small box of raisins, of which three I can eat like that, right? Mm-hmm. One of them is what you should be taking in daily in terms of sugar.
Wow. You learn all these different things as you grow, because I've talked about that as well. Is my mother was one of those people who her reward system was treats. You know, we did something good in school. We were good, you know, we go to Thrifties and get ice cream, and we always had cookies and snack. And looking back, you know, we didn't know, they didn't know, our parents didn't know, but we took in a lot of sugar, and now none of that sugar is in my house. One of the things that I thought was interesting about what Eva had to say is her entrepreneurial spirit. Lisa, I would love your thoughts on what Eva had to say.
Yeah, well, you know what, first of all, thank you all, because I've got so many ideas, but I'll try to focus, Sharifa, on
we want to hear them.
Yeah, well, what I loved about what you said, because I think this is a broader theme than just taking medication. I think the broader theme, as I listen to each of us, is that everyone's looking for the one thing that's going to fix it, right? So you have diabetes, you're not going to make all the little changes. You're going to go for the quick solution. But then, of course, every solution creates another problem. And so, you know, when I think of that in terms of my line of work around helping organizations be more inclusive, one of the issues I find is people say, okay, we need to bring in more people of color so that, you know, we look like we're diverse. Mm-hmm. But they're bringing people into a culture that is not very inclusive. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's take the pill of hiring more people who look different than me, but we're not going to deal with the real issue, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, happens in so many ways, whether it's, doctors providing medication to fix something, or, you know, organizations hiring a very expensive consultant to come and tell us what to do. And, you know, Bill, as you're listening to this, you know, my sense is that, you know, what you're trying to do is to also get rid of all those quick fixes. Like, let's tell a story, like, let's get rid of the Hollywood-y type of, you know, let's make other people make me look good with their blurbs, as opposed to the real thing that you're trying to do. And I think that's one of the things that we all share in common, is the quick fixes take a long time. The shortcut is the harder work to make real change possible.
Mm-hmm. Bill, what were your thoughts on what Lisa had to say?
Well, I listen and I find it all very interesting. In some regards, this ties back to the Byzantine pineapple stuff and the flat tax proposal. See, what I see is a lot of the issue is the reliance on health insurance and saying that health insurance is the way to go to solve things, right? You can have all the insurance plans in the world and they don't cover all the various weird things that can crop up. And in a certain sense, to what Marcy said of why don't more people go get tested for and checked out? Well, it costs money, right? Someone's got to pay. And it may either coming out of someone's pocket, or else they got to go have a copay deductible of some sort to be paid. And given a choice of, geez, I have to pay for my kids, I have to do all these other things in life. You know, I liken it to a friend of mine who probably should have had an MRI on his knee to keep playing basketball and figure out what's wrong, but he's paying for his kids' education and things like that. And so why?
So Bill, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, no. That's kind of what I do here, because I want to make sure that I understood what you're saying clearly. So you have a friend who basically made a life choice between his knee and his child's education. Is that correct?
Or clothing or whatever, you know, the capital goes to funding all sorts of various things.
So he's okay, in pain, but he's in pain in the meantime.
Well, it's pain that can be dealt with. I mean, we all have various aches and pains and things we can deal with. Yeah. You know, in various ways, some more than others. You know, I'm happy, I'm lucky. I have all sorts of pains from various sports injuries I had. I suffered a pretty severe one at the beginning of October, but no, it's fine. I'm getting by and I'm having a good old time. So,
but do you have? I'm sorry to hear that happened to you. But are there situations where if you had the money and the finances and the resources, you could go to the doctor and get them taken care of?
Well, what happened is, I was playing full court basketball, and busy Friday. I was very happy. We were beating up on the youngsters, completely fluke accident. Bodies in motion, running at full speed. One person was swinging their arm over the shoulder of another person as they were running up on a fast break, and I was guarding them. And the person in between turned their shoulder, and it changed the directory of the person's arm. And his fist hit me square in the eyeball.
Oh, wow.
Now, it didn't catch the nose, didn't catch the cheek, didn't catch the eye socket or whatever, square in the eyeball. Now, do I go get checked out right away or not? Right? I've got a choice to make. Now, you know, I'm not one to panic over things. And, you know, I could tell I was injured, but I was fine at the moment and I can play things out. Now, the Byzantine Pineapple says, let's pre-budget government, okay? And part of the pre-budgeting thing is what you do with healthcare is over time, starting with dental and then expanding to other areas, okay? You create a system where the individual, the citizen, can go get treated by a corporation and the corporation bills the government. Right. If we're saying it's a right of the citizen for health care, why do you need an insurance system? Mm-hmm. Right? Because an insurance system doesn't cover everything. An insurance system is very expensive. It's paying a lot of bonuses to a lot of executives and other people in the chain. in the U.S., if you go get an MRI through insurance, the insurance company is paying $3,000 or so. If you're paying out of pocket, and I know this through the exercise I just have gone through, $360. Okay.
Wow.
Then I want to pay for insurance when my premium is going to be $500 a month or so when I'm not using it.
You know? Interesting.
So if the system I described were in place, would I have gone to the eye doctor sooner? Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I don't got to worry about the cost of getting my eye fixed and looked at. I don't have to worry about the cost of going to the neurologist that I went to yesterday. Okay. Okay. And I don't mind, you know, it didn't cost me as much again. It cost me less than paying a monthly insurance premium to go and say I'm okay. Would I have gone sooner and done these things? Yes, I would have. Would people possibly go sooner and get tested for diabetes or other things if they don't have to worry about the cost and it's something that's billed directly and paid for out of the tax pool collected? Well, I think so, absolutely.
Very interesting. We have a lively conversation today going all different topics. And I think right now we're talking about healthcare in America. Absolutely. If you haven't shared this show, this is a great time because the information today is so interesting. Marcy, what did you have to say?
You know, a couple of things have come up for me in the conversations. What Bill was just talking about, I'm experiencing as a provider of a wellness product. We're into prevention. Prevention is the key. And just for the record, Bill, the test that we do is free to people. You know, you go to checkyourrisk.org/survey. You can take the survey at no cost, right? But then once you find out, yeah, it's going to start costing you. I am a provider, a community-based provider. We are the most effective in helping our communities, right? But Bill, to your point, the systems that people are accustomed to setting up, if I go to my church and I get 30 people to join this program, New York State Medicaid is paying for this program, Bill. But guess what? I have to do 10 agreements if they happen to represent the managed care organizations. Not everyone is Medicaid pure. They're Medicaid universal. I just had someone ask me, United Healthcare. Can you do United Healthcare? Can you do Affinity? So as a small entity trying to accommodate people in my neighborhood, marginalized people, I have to do 10 different agreements in order to accommodate a 30-person group.
Hence the title of the book, Byzantine, right? This is a Byzantine system.
And I'm talking 35, 50-page documents that should go to attorneys.
Yeah, but right? I mean, it doesn't have to be so complex. It can be simple.
I'm in agreement with you. In fact, I'm bringing it to people's attention right now because most of us will not be able to play in a sandbox with those barriers, which is tied into Lisa's car. You know, there are barriers that are systematic that when I call the people and I say, hey, you're not going to get people to do this because you're putting too many barriers in the way. Getting through Medicaid is hard enough. Now I have to be screened and I have to go through 17, you know, it's 11 companies I have to deal with
just to help people. And I know, like you said, Lisa mentioned that earlier. Lisa, I love your thoughts. A lot of these people are marginalized, like Marcy was saying. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, let's talk topically around COVID. Like the vast majority of people who get sick, get very sick from COVID are people from marginalized communities. Why? Because their healthcare has not been there for them through all the other issues that they've had. It's either expensive, they work 3 part-time jobs and none of them are insurable. They, you know, as Bill talked about, if, you know, I'm either going to put food on the table or get my kid through school, or I'm going to take care of my own health. And, you know, parents often will make incredible sacrifices for their families, including their health. And, you know, the thing with diabetes, if, you know, we go back to that for a second, many people don't have, as you said, Marcy, they don't have symptoms until things get more dire, right? So they'll experience, you know, issues with vision. They'll experience tingling in their fingers. They'll experience, you know, the things that diabetes lead to. And these will have happened over a period of time. And if your body is fighting or struggling to stay healthy, if you get COVID, you will get sicker, right? And if you get sicker, you now have to enter into a system in which you're still having to think about money in order to get better. And if you're sick, you're not focused on the things that we're all trying to do in this world, which is to build equitable workplaces, which to create inclusive communities. So, you know, all of this kind of fits together. And so, you know, to me, I've always said, if you don't have your health, it's really hard to have other things. But if you have a healthcare system that is not even enabling you to do, as Ava talked about, to figure out, like, let's find the ways to be healthy that don't involve a relationship with medication, with pharmaceutical companies. And let's focus on ways to be healthy that are really about going back to the needs of our body, fresh air, fresh food, clean water. And I mean, again, I'm a Canadian. I know what's happening in Flint, Michigan. I know what's happening in the United States where basic needs are not getting met. And that to me is deeply frustrating.
The world does. The world is watching the United States. Eva, love your thoughts on this conversation, because I think we brought it back to what your passion is and why you said, you know what, let me set up my shingle.
Yeah. Well, and it really is. I should take all of you with me wherever I go, because you've done a great job of proving my case. Yeah, if you do not have your health, you have nothing. And I was a single mom raising two kids on my own without the support of the deceased husband. So it was difficult to get by. And you're right, Bill, you do have to make those choices. Do I put food on the table, or do I, you know, make sure that I get the whatever checkup needs to be taken care of? But I think that the other comment about how people very often put themselves in this position of automatically creating a little snowball that turns into a big one when they do ignore those little signs and little symptoms. And there are things that you can learn about how to mitigate and reverse the effects of whatever you're coming into contact with, even if it's COVID, if it's diabetes. I was pre-diabetic. You know, you can reverse these things. There's things like PCOS. A lot of women every single month find themselves in a hospital on pain medications just to help with polycystic ovarian syndrome. And that also is reversible. And just because the doctors don't know how to help it in that way, they're acute. They're looking at how to, like you said, stuff down the symptoms. They're not addressing the root problem. Fine. So that then it's a two-pronged approach, and everything, all of the topics that we're talking about has an immediate solution along with the long-term solution. And I think one can't exist without the other. They need each other in order to get through it. And so, you know, if we can start having these more inclusive conversations, that's the key. And so that's one of the reasons, talk about shameless plugging. I just opened a new podcast myself. So a couple of Sundays ago was the premiere episode of When Doctors Say We Don't Know. And it's an inclusive conversation from the doctor's perspective, how frustrated they are that when a type 2 diabetic comes to their office and they're like, look, if you just make these lifestyle changes, and the patient says, no, just give me the pill. And then you have the reverse. So there's all these conversations that are becoming more and more prolific and out of the closet, out of that conversation at the dining table or with the, you know, on the phone with the sister complaining about how I only got 6 minutes in the doctor's office today and he didn't know what was wrong with me, out into the public. And people are craving to have these conversations. So it's doctors, it's nurses, it's, you know, practitioners like myself who turned their pain into triumph and I'm now helping others, and people who are still on the journey of health. So I think in knowing that we're not alone in any of our journeys, I think that's been a key to raising the level of conversation, not just having it to complain, but really raising your hand and saying, I want to be part of the solution. How can my story contribute?
Mm-hmm. So when and where can we tune into your podcast?
Oh, every Sunday at midnight, it launched. It's a new episode will appear, and it's on iTunes. It's on anchor.com. It's on a bunch of iTunes is going to be your most popular, mm-hmm. I think.
So when doctors say they don't know.
We don't know. Yeah.
I love that title.
Thank you.
Marcy, I think you're going to have to go everywhere Eva goes. You're going to have to go together.
Can I add something?
Absolutely.
One of the issues that the 8.org and I are collaborating on, there are resources in our country that are untapped, Sharifa, okay? I'm gonna switch it to more of what Lisa talks about. I joined the Columbia University Harlem Small Business Development Corp as I was building, right? Incredible workshops that they're doing, free to the community. New York University has it. Anywhere in you guys are who in the States, if you look up SBDC, Small Business Development Corp, you'll see that these are all around the country. Brilliant woman, Glamis Harrell, she's a finance person. She looked around in the room, she says, you know, this room should be packed. It had the capacity for about 200 people. There may have been 35 of us there. There's so many resources that go untapped. Even the program I'm doing, the CDC is fighting so hard to get the National Diabetes Prevention Program out there because it has worked for people and it's worked for my people and the two cohorts I've been doing. So we need to do more PSAs that are targeting, because celebrities work. That's why I wanted an Eric Adams. We're trying to get Busta Rhymes, who some of you may know, just went through a tremendous transformation. I don't know if diabetes, any of that was part of his transformation, but he's lost a lot of weight. He's ripped now and he just released an album. You know, we need people who younger people listen to, and older people as well, to stomp for the recognition of what we're talking about so that there are more conversations. Angela Bassett, and I'll close with this, her mother died of a heart attack and they realized she may have lived longer if she did not have type 2 diabetes. So she's joined the effort of the American Heart Association through videos. Has anyone seen her videos on social media?
I have not.
No? Well, it's a campaign that's ongoing and it's linking type 2 diabetes and heart attacks, because a lot of diabetics die of other things and heart attacks is one of the one thing that they, heart attacks and strokes. So, you know, we need people to be, to recognize the resources that go untapped. Untapped resources in our government on every level.
Mm-hmm.
Have okay, people so, so more like person who have seen that around and what I'm doing. So we're trying to become like the Ad Council, which is an agency that's been around forever. They do all the public service announcements in this country, the big campaigns. Mm-hmm. I'd like for us to plan ads to be that, targeting the marginalized, underserved communities, because that's a whole, that's where the problems are. Lisa just talked about it, you know?
Yes.
So we need to put a special attention using the people who they listen to. It may be the Atlantic housewives, you know what I mean?
Something.
Yeah.
But that's what, that's definitely what Lisa's focus is. So Lisa, when you hear Marcy speak about her passion and helping people, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think what we're all talking about here, and Sharifa, again, thanks to you for bringing us together, is when you build relationships with people, right? Like they will listen to you. And, you know, PSAs are really important because they start planting seeds. But if you have someone like you, Marcy, who's actually building relationships with people in the community, then the PSA connects with, oh, this actually has something to do with me. I can do something, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything that we do, and I say this to people when I'm coaching them, doesn't matter what your job is, you're in the business of people. You're mm-hmm. either influencing people, you're trying to help people work better together, you're trying to resolve conflict between people, you're trying to connect people. Like everything each of us does, we could not do without other people. We're all in the business of people, even though we might be, you know, if you're an accountant, if you're an engineer, there's a thing you do, a skill set, but you're doing it with and for other people. And I, you know, my sense is sometimes we forget that, like, and two things come out of that. One is we feel deeply alone and isolated. Here I am doing my thing. There's nobody, you know, and then I get into a conversation with all of you. And I'm like, I am so grateful that I am part of a community in which we are all trying to make a difference in each of our own ways. And one of the ways that I've been really focused on this, and I'm so curious about your podcast, Ava, because I started to co-host a podcast back in March. This was before the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and it's called Different People. It's different, the Different People podcast. And my co-host is brown-skinned. He's Muslim, and he was born in Africa. And I'm born in Canada to German parents. So we couldn't have more different backgrounds. And him and I role model what it's like to have difficult conversations between two very different people. And I can tell you, at the end of the day, you realize there are way more similarities, right? People have families. You talk about your family. People have celebrations. You talk about people have work and they might have bosses who annoy them. We all have so much more in common. And yet, unless we have the conversations, unless we build the relationships, that I think is, that's our secret sauce. That's our superpower that all of us have, is to just start connecting with people who are different from us, and let's learn from each other. goodness knows, you know, what I know is this compared to an ocean of knowledge and wisdom in the world. And if I can create my little tiny bit a little bit bigger, that is a huge contribution that each of us, I think, can make.
I think what you said is so profound and so wonderful. Two things come out of that. Number one, I always thought I was in the business of talking. You know what I mean? I guess I'm in the business of people because I meet 5 new people a day. And when I first announced and I launched this show, I was even wondering how it was going to work out, you know, because most panels, it's about a specific topic, or you have people from the same industry. Like we would have Bill with all people who are working on films and projects, or we have Marcy and Ava, people who are concerned with healthcare. And I said, you know what? I don't want to do that. I want to talk to people, put them in a round table conversation, because I do believe change starts with the conversation and just see how it goes. And what I have learned is exactly what you said, Lisa, is that we have more in common than we have that's different. Because I have, every show I've had has been beautiful. It has been amazing. I got one show that got sort of kind of heated, but aside from that, everyone walks away like, oh my God, I can't believe I met these people. And in somehow, some way, I mean, even look at Bill. Bill's in a whole different industry from just about all of you other lady or the ladies, but look at what Bill knows about healthcare. Who would have thunk it? Bill, the whole explanation you gave on healthcare, I thought was amazing.
I greatly appreciate that. And since we're getting towards the end here, I'll take a couple of minutes to wind up all my stuff for everything. The information that I have here is always available on the website of poje.biz. And everything that I do is created as under POGE LLC, but the offshoot of that is Corporation X. That's the vehicle to work with people. So if anyone wants to get involved, either as investment or in other areas as actors, actresses, and directors and production people will always be needed down the road to make things happen. That's the vehicle, and that's what Corporation X is about, the people who want to do this. So with the Byzantine pineapple, it says the system needs to change. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, and nothing that the political right or the political left, in my opinion, have to offer really is changing the system. And so that is what that is about, and I think it would make an excellent film, a la An Inconvenient Truth, or other documentary type style things that seek to promote change. But I'm a capitalist, and to fund everything, I think you have to have the fiction products that will resonate with people and will work, hence the Less Trilogy and the 30-second overview of all of them. And one of the other exciting products, for me exciting, coming up this next year, I'm currently working on it, is the Salvador Dali Cipher, which combines the TV show Charmed with the Da Vinci Code using the works of Dali. And so instead of Prue, we have Plude, and she ends up with a hookup with the demon Dodil. He lives in Porky Pig's Wacky Land. Very surrealistic stuff. Instead of Piper, we have Piper's wife. She has some tricks up her sleeve. And instead of her having a hookup with Leo on the TV show, it's Leonardo, as in Leonardo da Vinci. And then finally, instead of Phoebe, it's Feel Me, the empath, P-F-E-L-L, P-F-E-E-L-M-I. And her hookup is with Detective Cole, Detective Glaucus Cole, a play on Cole Turner, who is the hookup for Phoebe on the TV show. Mm-hmm. And so there is a big action in the Dali Museum in Tampa. Right now, the scenes I am writing are the big action in the Dali Museum in Spain. And the climax will be in the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. And that's what it's about, creating fun fiction products, which are used to not only be profitable in a capitalistic manner for all involved, but also to promote social change.
I like that, Bill. And I think Lisa just sent me a question psychically, so I'm gonna ask it for her. But when you create your projects, do you take into account diversity and inclusion in your cast?
I don't think in terms of how the concept of diversity has been presented here, okay? Ageism is thinking of, is making decisions based upon age. Mm-hmm. Sexism is making decisions based upon sex. Mm-hmm. Racism is making decisions based upon race. I don't think in terms of race in that regard. Now, in a humorous context, Detective Cole in the Salvador Dali cipher, he's black as coal. He's black as coal. That's the joke. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yes, there is an relationship. I forgot, the word's escaping me at the moment.
No, I like it. I like the different, I can see the different. I just wanted to ask that quick question. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, that's what I do here. And we have 5 minutes left on the show.
Yeah.
What I'd love to, because that's a whole nother conversation that we got to bring you guys back for to have. I was just interested because I was looking at the characters. I'm like, okay, so you got the brunette, you got the blonde. So we might have to have that conversation, but we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And I'd love to start with you first, Ava.
Oh, yay. So thank you, I appreciate that. I'm putting myself in the shoes of those who have joined the work at home community and never thought they would. They always thought they would be going to an office space and interacting with people, and they've been very much isolated at home and interacting on Zoom, developing what I affectionately call Zoom butt. And there are resources for everyone as the rate of anxiety goes up, as the rate of depression goes up, as the rate of sleepless nights, you know, the insomnia goes up due to COVID and our situation, as it were, as a community. And I want to say there is help out there, and to listen to that inner voice, not just ignore it, not just say, oh, if I take a nap or everything will get better once I get my office back to where it is, or once my life returns to normal. Guess what? This is the new normal for right now. And the longer we put it off, the more time it's going to take to recover. And if you're seeking help naturally, a way to overcome those little voices inside that say something is off, I don't know quite what it is, don't wait. Get the help. Find out, find somebody who's been where you are, has what you want and that you trust and like, and employ them to help you through the hump, however long this takes, because I've had COVID and it is stubborn, but it can be overcome, and you don't have to have complications as a result, and you don't need to lose your job or have sleepless nights anymore. So that would be my biggest request for everybody listening.
Absolutely, Cindy, you light and love. 3 minutes left of the show. Marcy, what do you have for us?
Stacey Abrams. That's what I want to end with. 800,000 new registered voters. She was robbed. She didn't get mad. She got even. We all need to do our part, whatever that part is. Right? We've all selected our part in what, how we're going to contribute to the solutions and not be part of the problems, right? And so, you know, tonight I have a webinar, it's free, and checkyourwrist.org/webinar. You can hear Lou Keith, who is using natural remedies. I think Lisa talked about fresh air, sunshine, rest, temperance. That's the hard part. That's the big one. Meditation. Yes. You know, there's
things that we can do. Definitely want to check out the webinar tonight that Marcy is holding. Thank you, Marcy. Lisa, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I would just simply say, and I love that you brought up Stacey Abrams, like, listen, we all can do something. She did something remarkable for Georgia. All of us have a sphere of influence. And, you know, some of the stuff we need to do is hard. Could be having a difficult conversation. It could be trying to persuade somebody of something, but it doesn't mean that we're alone in doing it. And, you know, I would welcome, and we're looking for feedback, my co-host and I. So our podcast, the Different People Podcast, www.differentpeople.ca. We're doing a new season now. Our second episode of the second season just launched yesterday. And we're talking about how to make real inclusive change in organizations. And I welcome feedback. We need help getting there. And I'm just so grateful that I've had the opportunity to share in this conversation with all of you. And thank you, Sharifa, for inviting us.
You are so welcome. I'll have a podcast, another talk show, face-to-face talk show, which airs Wednesdays at 10 a.m. So I would love to invite you and your co-host to join me and my co-host, Paul Foss, who is a white guy out of New York City, Jewish guy who wants to have these same conversations. So you have the white guy, the black female, and that's what we're doing. Paul and I would love to join you on your show. I'd love to invite you and your co-host to our show. So let's talk about that off air. Bill, final words for us.
From my perspective, there's 330 million people in the USA, and no matter what the media says, 330 million people aren't rioting and being mad at each other. We all get along much better than anyone presents.
Yes, I think those are wonderful words to end this show. Why can't we all just get along? Because I think that's what it's all about. I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you are not important. We still need your help. We still need your support. We still need you to go ahead and share the show. But most importantly, please visit our guests, check out their websites, follow them on social media, send them a message. And when you send over that first message, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you want more information on how I can help you or your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to the New Year, New You 2-day teleconference, which is December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.